down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
It's been a really challenging few years for the hospitality sector. And at the vanguard of all have been the restaurants and their chefs and proprietors. For this week's industry review, I wanted to speak to a few chefs and restaurateurs to get a sense of just where this vital industry sits as we face down inflationary and staffing pressures. Joining me this morning, I'm delighted to be joined by Anna Haugh. She's the executive head chef and owner of Myrtle Restaurant in London. Also joining me is JP McMahon, chef restaurateur and author of Cava and Near and now Kumbu. Jessica Murphy also joins us from Galway, the head chef and co-proprietor at Kai Restaurant. You're welcome, Jessica. As does Will Dempsey, here with me in studio, a restaurant and owner at the Hanged Eye on Camden Street. And Will, I'm going to start with you. Firstly, tell us a little bit about your business and how things are just currently. And just before I introduce Will, I would like to say that 3 out of 4 of our guests are opening new entities. So that says this is a positive. So no doubt we'll be hearing about this in the course of our conversation over the next while. So Will, on to you. You're the owner of Hanged Eye, but you're also opening a new outlet in Rapmines.
I am indeed, yes. Yeah. So Hanged Eye is a Chinese restaurant based on Camden Street. Been open now for 9 years. Things have been quite up and down with COVID in the middle, obviously. Coming out of COVID kind of changed things, and, you know, it's been pretty good since. Keeping our nose above water. Camden Street's a great location. Hanged Eye is quite popular, so I've been lucky at where I'm at. During COVID, we did a lot of takeaway, and I wanted to, I suppose, during lockdown, to kind of separate the takeaway from the restaurant. We did a thing outside called Hawker, which was a kind of a Chinese street food offering. And I'm bringing that brand back to life now in Rapmines next month.
Good man. Stay with us. We've lots to talk about. That's good news and a real positive start. Now, Anna, delighted to talk to you as well. Myrtle Restaurant, called after the famous Myrtle Allen, who did so much for Irish food. You're also in London, probably maybe a slightly different market to what's happening in Dublin, but tell us where you're at the moment and how things are.
So Myrtle is 6 years old now, and she's gone from strength to strength. Customer satisfaction is through the roof and spend per heads are all really good, but the economic climate here is very strange. So it's hard to predict what days are going to be busy and what days are going to be quiet. So you can be absolutely booming on a normally quiet day. And then on the normally busy days, you can then go kind of oddly quiet. So it is a bit up and down, but people are still very hungry to connect with what is Irish kind of culture and food and produce. And it's really exciting. And I've also opened a wine bar last year, which is on the King's Road, which is about Irish, what celebrates like wine made by Irish people around the world.
Wow.
And Irish snacks and stuff.
And Anna, how far is that restaurant? Is the wine bar from Myrtle? Are they in the same area?
It's a stone's throw. So
right.
So it's not exactly the perfect time to open up another business now in London. But I really believe sometimes in business, you have to take a jump. This site came up and I knew it was a perfect site for me. I had to do it. So it's going to be a bit of a rocky road for a period of time. But in the long run, I think it's a brilliant job opportunity for growth of my staff and for growth of kind of business ideas in general. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, that's great, and well done you. I'm sort of intrigued by what you say about, I suppose, matching customer demand with, you know, your own resources, i.e. that you try and optimise the right amount of people on the site versus your costs at that said site. That can be tricky in terms of reservations and that. Is that something, like, do you know how busy you're going to be tomorrow, next week, next month? How does it work?
So we used to know further away from the time what our numbers were going to be, where I find that it's almost right up until the week before we kind of really understand what the kind of numbers and the bookings are going to be.
Right.
And even though it's a week before, that seems like, oh, you've got that kind of notice. There isn't, it's not guaranteed. So it's like, you might not pick up, you might pick up, you might then have walk-ins. Like it's just got a really, People are unpredictable because the economic environment is unpredictable at the moment. And I think that's what it's reflecting. Yeah. But as far as customer satisfaction, that's wonderful. It's great. We have a great return custom as well. But yeah, it just feels that, you know, 6 years on, the restaurant should be in a position that is more predictable than it is. But, you know, I am in no different position than any other fine dining restaurant really in London. It's the same across the board.
Tough old gig. Stay with us, Anna. Stay with us. Let's talk to Jessica Murphy, head chef and co-proprietor of Kai in Galway. Jess, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Bobby. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Now tell us where you're at and how are things in your wonderful business?
Well, Kai is flying it. We also have a sister bakery called Happy Bakery. We're currently employing 25 people in the west of Ireland. Yeah, we're just going strength to strength, like a rolling stone gathers no moss, really. But yeah, times are certainly tougher. It's just like the added costs on everything. It's not one thing particular. It's just accumulation of like loads of like costs going on and on and on and on.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to sort of talk about, Jess, I suppose in as positive a way as we can, like you're booked out every night since April, but you say the business is breaking even right now. That's a very frustrating place to be when you're really, really busy, but you're not really making any money.
Well, it is. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I mean, a restaurant is a vocation. I don't think anyone goes into owning a small restaurant to be booming in business. But, you know, like, I'm, like, really proud of us. Like, we are really busy. I mean, the fact that we employ 25 people, we have a bakery. Bakery's doing really well. We've had to, like, expand and start doing wholesales for other cafes around Galway that don't offer food. So, you know, on a positive note, we are flying it. But, you know, it's just, if you didn't love it, you'd be in terrible trouble.
It's also very frustrating, Jess, is it not, that, you know, that one of the sole ways of improving your predicament is to put up prices, clearly something you don't want to do. And how do you wrestle with that, that you want to put something on the menu, but you know you'll have to charge €50 for it and it'll just piss customers off?
Yeah, well, at the moment, because, I mean, obviously we hold the only green Michelin star in Ireland, which is based on what we buy off local boats and local farmers, like local beekeepers. We have over 320 suppliers in the west of Ireland alone. So our produce is solely in the west of Ireland. So our produce would be way more expensive than just like getting it off the back of a truck.
So really, so what you're saying there is that there's a price to pay for local sourcing products locally. There's a premium that needs to be paid, and that premium must find its way to the customer's plate, does it not?
100%. And you'll find that a lot of customers are really positive about that. Like, they've known us for 14 years. We still have Galway families that come into us maybe 2-3 times a week. And they completely understand that. They know that Dave's on the floor 10 hours a day. I'm in the kitchen 12 hours a day. You know, they respect that because they see the graft.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky that we have so many amazing customers in the west of Ireland that understand that. We really get a complaint about how much the food is because, you know, we have a really small menu and we're really community focused on our menu. So, you know, the crab coming from the Aran Islands are just, you know, two people that own a boat, you know. All our fish is from Ross Abiel. So we're really lucky that the Galwegians actually respect, you know, their own home county.
Okay, well, stay with us. That's wonderful work you're doing. JP McMahon, also from Galway, you're very welcome to the programme. Owner of Kava and Air, and shortly to launch Kombu, a Japanese concept. Am I right, JP?
Yeah, we're due to open next Friday, and as the others were saying, I mean, it's precarious at the moment. It has its ups and downs, but there is a little bit of positivity shining through, and there are opportunities in different ways of cooking in different genres at the moment.
it's interesting to see, and I was just looking again at the notes of you all, that, you know, there seems to be an element of diversification happening in all your businesses, which I think is really interesting. But also the common denominator that I see is that it's probably into, is it, or maybe not in your case, JP, but is it into a more affordable proposition? Is it bringing, is it more a middle market offer than the fine dining high end?
No, certainly that is an absolute consideration. And while I love what we do in Anir, it is a labor of love, and it's always important to demystify. I mean, usually the more expensive the menu gets, it doesn't necessarily equate to the more money the restaurant makes. And usually the most profitable restaurants are at the lower end of the scale. And even lower is the wrong word, but I suppose we're trying to find ways in which to keep our ethos and the different suppliers that we use, as Jess was saying, but try and offer something more affordable and more mid-range. And I think that one of the futures of Irish food is trying to use the best you can get, but make it accessible, and trying to do, I suppose, a bit more quantity, so that can kind of balance out your costs. Because again, as I was saying to your research, one of the biggest difficulties for us is labor costs, and I think that's probably across the board. And I think we spoke before about, I mean, your traditional labor cost being at 30%, you know, and it's well on 40 now, if not in the winter 45. So you really have to be careful. And while you might make the money in the summer, you really have to bank that and make sure you make it through the winter, because there's no point in making it in the summer and losing it in the winter and then borrowing it to take you through.
It's a real dichotomy, is it not, JP, where, you know, the labour cost effectively also probably dictates the hours that you can open rather than the customer demand, so that the business proposition is being sort of, I suppose, balanced around available hours, plus you also want to pay your people as well as you can to attract and retain them. So it seems to me to be a very difficult note to just hit on the right space.
No, absolutely. No, we even reduced the menu in Cava to try and have one less person in the kitchen on the floor because of labour cost, because we can't just keep adding more and more money to the menu. So we had to look internally and say, well, can we restructure the kitchen where we can work with one less chef, or could we restructure the floor? Because again, you want everyone to get paid well, but at the same time, once your staff costs are over 40, you're in a critical point where you really have to say, well, how do we bring this down? And you can hope that VAT comes down, or you can hope that energy comes down, but there's a lot internally you can do. And but most of the time for a restaurant, particularly for a small restaurant, it's the only two things you can try and tackle are labor cost and food cost. But again, as Jess was saying, if we're buying our chicken from the friendly farmer, like, I'm not going to be asking Ronan to negotiate price. Like, his price is his price. So it's not like you can pop over to somebody else, you know?
Yeah. What do you make of this, Will Dempsey, owner of Hang Dai? Restaurants operating now on a 2-3% net margin. It's a very precarious place, is it not?
Yeah, it certainly is. It's a real fine line between kind of making money and not making money. Like the other contributors are saying, it's the cost of produce has really gone up over the years. You know, beef recently has shot through the roof. Talking to my chef the other day and trying to see if we can get some tomahawk steaks or, you know, whole wild sea bass on the menu, and you get the prices in and you're just like, God, if I put that on, people are going to just, you know.
So you'll make a choice then on the basis of something not being affordable that you actually won't put it on.
Exactly, yeah. Now, sometimes you'll put it on and not make margin just to have that special thing there. But just, yeah, it's everything. I get monthly stock reports and they do a lot of analysis on the prices of things that I buy. And looking at it over the years, rice, flour, sugar, oil, everything has tripled, quadrupled. You add the energy crisis on top of that, I'd say my gas, electricity bill, pre-COVID was probably 5k every 2 months for gas electricity. Now I'm up around 12, 14. It was over 20 last year. You know, that's $2,500 a week to turn on the lights. It's nuts.
Yeah, that's really, and when you're not getting that percentage increase on the cost of the plate, or anything close to it.
Exactly, yeah. JP said, you know, you start looking at your staff, you start looking at your prices, and these are the things you don't want to look at, you know.
Yeah.
Improve the quality of the product you're selling. So.
And are you in the same space when it comes to this sort of challenge?
Yeah, well, I actually feel when it comes to the price of produce, that is the backbone of what Myrtle is, and the wee sister as well. Like we, it's only Irish produce over there as well. But that's really important. I think what kills me is all the other overheads, the things that customers couldn't imagine what we have to pay to kind of run the business. So it's the different taxes, like there's business rates over here, which I pay. They're usually half what your rent is. So it's like tens of thousands of pounds a year for just opening a business. That's it. That's all. You don't get a plastic bag for that. And then 20% VAT. It's always been 20% VAT for restaurants here. And I feel it's unfair. Like if I buy a product and there's a VAT on that and you pass it on to the customer, that's something that's very logical. But if the product is actually physically made in the building and it's perishable, I feel that this blanket 20% VAT tax is unfair. So whether you're making a huge loss, the government's still taking 20% of every single penny that's spent in the building. And it just doesn't make sense. And the customers can't imagine how many kind of invisible bills to do with my insurance. I pay the landlord's insurance, you pay the tax to be allowed to play music. And all of these things are important, but everything has gone up in price. Rent has gone up. Everything has gone up. Power has I used to pay £500 a month. I now pay about £1,500 a month. It's insanely expensive. It's insane. And but for all of these things, I could make you cry with some of the stories that are happening. I still can't believe my luck. I still walk over the bridge. I walk over Battersea Bridge and I go, this is my dream. This was the dream that everybody thought was crazy, that you won't be able to do it.
You've got to love it.
And it's not smooth sailing and it's not perfect, but that's living a life and that's running a business. And I fight tooth and nail to be able to protect the whole concept of what this represents. And it is, you know, a home away from home for me. So, you know, I do love it, but man, I'd love a little magic wand and fix the economic climate.
You'd love was a bit easier, and rightly so, Anna. Jess, I think what Anna is saying probably echoes with you as well. It's all about the cause. You're doing what you love. You wish you could make a bit more money at it, but you're going to keep doing what you're doing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as a blow-in to the west of Ireland, you know, I've just finished writing a cookbook, a love letter to the west of Ireland, and it's 14 years of Kai. The connections over the last 22 years that I've made in Ireland, especially the west of Ireland, after coming from New Zealand to work for Kevin Thornton, you know what I mean? It's just ingrained, like such a passion project as well, you know.
So I
love the people.
Is your book about the business of running the restaurant, or just stories along the way? And is there more than?
It's the book's about all like amazing stories of suppliers, farmers.
Oh, great!
Suppliers with like fruit and veg, the whole history of Kai. So. Yeah, it's a bit of crack, Bobby.
Yeah, well done. That's good. And it's good to... It probably was... Was it an easy book to write?
No, it took me 2 years.
Right.
But yeah, I got there in the end.
JP, what factors did you consider before deciding to embark on your third restaurant? Because I know you had one before that you closed down. And after doing that, you used this sort of... Your approach this time round to the Japanese restaurant Kombu, what factors did you consider?
Well, I tried to say no lots of times, and then it kept coming back to, oh, look, maybe this is a good idea, maybe it's not. I mean, it's always a risk, and as Anna and Jess said, it's a labour of love, and you have to love it, and you take the chance. But certainly, I mean... rent was a factor, like looking at the premises. I mean, I'm always looking at premises, and like as Anna mentioned, about sometimes you find one and you see one and you think, you know, I think I can make this work, and is there longevity in this over 5 or 10 years? And I mean, that's what I'm trying to think. I mean, the last thing you want to do is open a restaurant for a couple of years. And Tartar that we had for 5 years, kind of COVID killed it. And then also the Ukraine war with energy costs. And so there are still the challenges and trying to kind of educate the customer about, like, I mean, your insurance, say, for a year is like €10,000. It's a 20-seater restaurant. And, like, that's a lot of plates to sell. So taking all that in and trying to make the figures work. But, like, a restaurant, at the end of the day, it's a community, and it's in a place in a certain city. And I think it's trying to make sure that the offering is for that place. And I think anyone that goes into the restaurant business to make a lot of money is in the wrong business. And I think that it's about, like, for me, it's about making sure the food is good and everyone's paid. I mean, that's what it is at the end of the day. And if you have a couple of percent left, I mean, I don't think we've ever taken, we're in business 17 years now with Cava, and every penny we've ever made has been reinvested to either do something else or to make the offering better. So it's not something you go into looking for a return, you know.
Yeah. And where do you see this landing, JP, over the next number of years? Like, the struggles are clearly there, and there's no hiding from them in terms of the cost base and trying. But are we going to get to a point where, you know, people will still want, there's a real want for good food, there's a real want for a great restaurant experience, but is it likely to become less affordable than it is now?
I think so, but I think if we look back to the 80s, I mean, eating out wasn't affordable. So I think we went through a period of maybe 20 years where we've kind of, like, where dining out became more and more and more affordable, and that kind of bubble burst. And I think that we will go back to a point where you, if you want to put a steak on the menu, it's going to be 50 or 60 euro, and people are going to have to, I suppose, appreciate that. It's not to say that there won't be cheaper places, but the way I see it going is that, like, there are a lot of restaurants in Ireland, and there's I think the middle is where it's going to get carved out. I mean, I think that's why identity is so important for a restaurant, and, like, there are an awful lot of generic restaurants, and that generic restaurants still open every day, or multinational restaurants. And I think that for me, it's having an identity and having a sense of place for a restaurant is the most important thing. And I think that's the way to try and survive.
Yeah, well said. Last quick word to you, Will Dempsey. Yep. Hawker in Rathmines, your learnings from Hang Dai. Are you going to be doing anything differently there?
Well, it's got to be definitely different than Hang Dai, the look and feel of it. There's only going to be 4 stools in the place, so it's not really a dine-in thing. It's going to be mainly focused on takeaway,
yeah,
some catering stuff as well. So, yeah, just get in and roll up the sleeves and go for it. And
all right, well, look, I can tell by my conversation with 4 great guests, the passion is there, the love for the business is there. And although things are challenging, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining me this morning. Anna Hall, JP McMahon, Jess Murphy and Will Dempsey, thank you all so much, and every success to you in your quest to provide good food at affordable prices.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.